And I think that when you see someone like Courtney winning something and running these times, which were like unfathomable, you've got this kind of, oh, like, I could do that. You know, I should be able to do that. And you start to run a little differently, and you're that mindset changes, and suddenly your body can do more than what it thought it could. And yeah, I feel like this is just the beginning of a pretty special time for young people and for women in the sport.
Kia ora everyone, that was Lucy Bartholomew. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners.
Matt, what are you doing?
I'm writing songs.
About what? We're trying to do a podcast.
My feelings.
Feelings about what?
Well, I'm thinking about, you know how I've always wanted to do a concept album?
No, I didn't. No, I thought we were doing a podcast.
Well, I'm a polymath, and I've always wanted to do...
Anyway, sorry, carry on.
A sort of a chivalry metal sort of fantasy concept album about, you know, the difference of three. And I'm finding, and I was looking on the Ultra website, and they talk about the difference of three as well.
They've got to you, haven't they?
They have.
They've got to you. They've really got to you.
And the difference of three, you know, their foot-shaped toe box, their specific fit for her... fit for her technology, and that cushion zero drop. I mean, my difference of three or power of three would have been, you know, three wizards, warlocks maybe.
But apparently they thought about that, but since we exposed the whole thing, they dropped that idea.
Yeah, it's so difficult.
So how's this going to work with the podcast?
I need to talk to you about that. But
are you going off books? Are you dumping me?
Well, it's going to be we're going to transition to it while I'm, you know, saving up money for an electric guitar. I mean, I've only got this ukulele at the moment.
It's a beautiful ukulele, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, maybe you could put it down and we could just, like, carry on the podcast. But if you do want to talk about the fit for her technology, the cushioned
zero drop. Yep. Or the foot-shaped toe box.
Yeah, we could do that later.
We could. So...
But yeah. I mean, it is, you know, that's the Ultra way. And
it is
Ultra.
The Ultra way. Yeah. Yeah. For sponsoring this podcast proudly. And we're proud to have you on board. And thank you.
Thanks, Ultra.
Dirt Church Radio.
Here we go. Episode 14.
1-4.
1-4.
We made it.
Yeah.
Hey, Lucy Bartholomew.
Lucy Bartholomew. Let's all talk at once.
Woohoo.
Stoked. I mean, this was a great conversation. And I really want to get into it. We've got a little bit to talk about first, but it was great to get some time to catch up with her. She was back in Melbourne after, you know, a really stellar northern summer away racing. And yeah, it was, for someone who is 22 years old, and I didn't realize she was 22 years old until just before we spoke to her, sounds cliche, but wise beyond her years.
Absolutely. And just so down to earth and full of really good advice and good thinking behind that advice. Not just kind of, you didn't get the sense that it was just sort of rote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And also, we are bringing the Antipodean love. So it's our second
Aussie in a row.
Yes, we've got an actual Aussie problem.
People are going to start talking.
Or is it an Aussie opportunity?
We're going to have to start the show with g'day.
No, don't start the hate.
Don't start it. No, that wasn't hate. That was respect.
That was love.
Hey, I had a look at her Instagram account and happened to see something where she talked about how she was running on the grass barefoot.
Yes.
As part of kind of just connecting with nature and strengthening the feet muscles and stuff. So I gave it a go on Sunday at the end of my run.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
It went pretty good. I just did 5 minutes to start with on the grass. I'm not going to become a barefoot runner, don't worry. But it was just good to feel the grass between your toes again.
It really does help.
She's packed full of good advice. Anyway, we'll get more out of that on the in our conversation.
But speaking of Lucy as well, in the conversation we have with her, she mentioned that a couple of days after our talk, she was running the Great Ocean Walk 100K Ultra in Victoria. She didn't just run it. she won it in 11 hours and 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And she was running it with her old boy, her dad, and she said that she would put him to the sword, and he finished in 16 hours.
Yeah.
So.
And then the next day, she went and like cheered on the sideline as her brother smashed out a PB.
And the marathon, 3 hours something. Like,
yeah,
like
just tick over three.
Yeah,
three and it was and a change. Huge PB, so...
Yeah.
Not a bad weekend.
So whatever the Bartholomew whānau are doing, they're doing it right.
Yeah, well done, all of yous. And there was heaps of racing on this side of the Tasman too.
Yep, heaps of racing. So we had the Taupo Ultra Marathon over the weekend, the third year that has been run, and the third year that original Riverhead homeboy Nick Johnson has won the 100K race.
Yeah. And set another course record.
8 hours and 23 minutes. I think that's about an hour off his best time.
One of my lasting moments, memories of last summer was when we went and did a run in the forest, and it was a two-lapper.
Yeah.
Was it on the... I think it was on the Riverrand course. Yeah. So first lap happened, and Nick kind of just jogged along with us, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then it was just me and a couple of others doing the second lap, and he kind of was hanging back with us, and I could just feel that he was, like, ready to go off the leash.
Yeah.
And I said to him, "Hey, Nick, you don't, at the start of the second lap, hey Nick, you don't have to hang back with us if you don't want to." And he was gone. And basically he was finished, home, showered, eating lunch by the time that we sort of got to halfway.
One of my best memories with Nick is going for a long training run with him and running until I fainted.
Yeah. You ran yourself into the ground.
I did. And it didn't matter to him because I couldn't run as fast as he was if I was on fire.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
He's a beast. Anyway, well done. That was a good course record.
Indeed.
And Sarah Fisher, she had a convincing win in the women's. And I think she was more than half an hour up on second place.
Wow.
Yeah, 11:09.
That's so awesome. Well done.
That's awesome, Sarah. And in the Port Hills.
Otahuhtahi?
Yes. Christchurch.
Yeah.
The New Zealand and
Oceania. Oceania.
Trail Tabs, held in conjunction with the Crater Rim Ultra. And Andrew Thompson won the men's.
Yep.
And Nancy Zhang was the champion of the women's.
And didn't she come third at CCC or something?
Yeah, fifth, I want to say.
Top 10 anyway.
Top 10. And she came 15th at the World Mountain Running Champs not so long ago.
Wow, let's get her on the show.
We need her on the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that would be great. So well done, those two championes.
Absolutely.
We should get some like champion music.
And also well done to, you know, we had heaps of people that we knew who ran the Taupo Ultra, the 50, the 75, and, you know, people doing their first longer races. So congratulations to all the peeps who did that.
Are you just trying to shame me into saying the Dirt Church OG?
No, but you can bring that up if you want.
All right. Matt did a Instagram post in which he referred to Tom,
our friend,
as one of the Dirt Church OGs, and shame fate. I have to admit that I had to ask my 16-year-old and our editor, Kieran, what OG stood for. I think people should write in if they know what OG means.
It means original gangster. Everyone knows what it means, Eugene.
Am I the only one?
Pretty much.
Okay. Can we move on?
Stuff you should know.
Thank you. Well done. Hey, Camille Heron.
Yeah.
Who is coming out to Tarawera.
She is.
And is a leading light in our sport.
Mm-hmm.
She has been really outspoken on Twitter about drug testing. She retweeted the other day a study which surveys self-reporting of doping in ultramarathoners, in which there was quite a bit of pot.
Yep. It's legal in Colorado.
Yep. A lot less medicinal testosterone than I would have guessed, said the tweeter at Sweat Science, Alex Hutchinson, and a few hints that some are using pot as a performance enhancer rather than a social or medical drug. And Camille retweeted that and said, worth noting that there's zero out-of-competition drug testing by USA Anti-Doping of American mountain ultra trail athletes. It costs dollars, and the IAAF requires anyone in testing pool to be tested for at least 3 times a year.
Right.
Then she went on to say that she tried to inquire about adding herself and other mountain ultra trail runners to the testing pool to be held accountable. She thought it weird that she'd never been contacted.
Yes.
And they said, we can't be added to the testing pool because of the 3 test requirements, which would cost money, presumably by USA Track and Field.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to shout her out, really, and say give her a shout out and say good on you for trying to get our sport included in drug testing.
Yep, increased transparency.
Absolutely, and accountability.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we've had an example this year in New Zealand of somebody in our sport falling foul of drug testing.
Yes.
So why not? You know? So anyway, we just wanted to mention that and say good on you.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, there was a bit of a follow-up to Stuff You Should Know. Well, not really, but associated with Stuff You Should Know last week.
Indeed. We talked about Mental Health Awareness Week last week, and I said how I, as a mental health professional, had talked about in the past my kind of frustration that I don't think that Mental Health Awareness Week really reaches people who have a serious lived experience of mental illness. However, I still support mental health awareness because any talk about mental health is good. And then I came to the internet and found this piece on thespinoff.co.nz by Wellington writer Emily Wrights, and it's entitled, "Does Mental Health Awareness Week Actually Change Anything for People with Mental Illnesses?" It's one thing for me as a health professional to speak out and say that I think that, you know, this is the case, but I think it's another thing to hear from a person who has a lived experience of, you know, how pernicious a serious mental illness can be. And I'd encourage everyone, this person's name's Emily Wright, go to thespinoff.co.nz and have a look at this. It's a very elegantly written article, and it doesn't bag mental health services, and it doesn't really bag Mental Health Awareness Week, but what it's saying is it's more than just going outside. And there are lots of people out there for who, you know, listening to the Tangi of the Manu, the Song of the Birds, it's not going to work for. So I'd just like to read you the last piece of this. She says, "So maybe we can make a change this year. And when folks say reach out, they could mean this. Reach out to your local Member of Parliament and ask them to make mental health a priority issue." Damn right. "Reach out and tell them that there isn't affordable counselling available, that psychiatry costs more than dentistry, and it's a class issue that so many people will never have access to either. Reach out to those around and raise money for the organisations that are filling the gaps. Postnatal Depression Wellington, Perinatal Anxiety and Depression Awareness, Lifeline. Those places that rely on grants after government funding cuts. Reach out to those people who the system never helped. Those people who rely on soup kitchens and homeless shelters, and demand your local authorities support these charities for people suffering severely from a lack of mental health support. Reach out to the people who can actually do something. Reach out so that when someone needs help, there is actually help available." And I could not agree more.
Boom.
Mm. And that is Stuff You Should Know.
That's a great addition to what you had to say last week.
Absolutely.
Well, if we had to say last week.
If we're going to run around patting ourselves on the back because we raise money for the Mental Health Foundation, we need to know that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, we are becoming sort of addicted to reading the stuff comments section.
Yeah, I've got a problem, eh?
I do.
So
I do.
But when we say stuff, that's stuff.co.nz, Eugene writes a regular Dirt Church column.
And every week I manage to slip in a photo of ourselves.
Fantastic.
Just to put people off. And this week's one was kind of based on what our conversation last week featured with Mayal about people on the start line. I sort of used that for inspiration and quoted him talking about how what he found in China, people jumping up and down and doing star jumps and being so excited. And the headline on it was, "Quit Your Moaning, Why You Should Suppress the Dread and Find Gratitude," which invited stuff comment people, people who go to the comments.
Lurching to their laptops.
Because they were just filled with positivity.
Yeah, it generally appears that these people are people who might actually hate running and everything about running and maybe runners, yet take time to read a column you've got to dig down into stuff. It's not front page news.
It's just so perverse. Find it
and take time to read a column about running.
Yeah, so that they can just write a comment. So Bazza of Inverness, which is presumably Invercargill.
Or Inverness in Scotland.
Could be Inverness.
Yeah.
"The rarest mammal on earth is a runner or jogger with a genuine smile on their face. Yes, it is easy to tell a smile of pleasure from a grimace of pain."
Our legend replied, "If you're," spelt wrong, "smiling, then you aren't running hard enough."
Wow, a couple of bangers there.
Yeah.
Dump the Trump.
Dump the Trump, which is an excellent beer by Behemoth Brewing.
There you go.
No sponsorship affiliation, but yeah.
"I'm smiling because I don't run. Kick the adrenaline fix."
Well done.
Well, it's good that you still keep reading running columns, Dump the Trump.
Yeah.
They did come back. I'll just, spoiler alert, there's another one coming up from Dump the Trump.
Roswell who might be affiliated with Outra, said, agree with this article. I'm lucky that most of the people I do events with are fairly positive and are there to have fun. I did a race last weekend, which my training plan didn't happen for various reasons and was underprepared for the event. I was smiling both at the start and the finish. The mood mid-race may have been slightly different. That's a remarkably sane and insightful comment.
They got it. Thank you, Roswell.
You're in the wrong place, Roswell.
I like to try and think of the event as a celebration of my training, the party at the end of the process. Boom!
Yeah.
That's perfect. I still get nervous, though. What irks me is people who go on and on and on about how they haven't done enough training when they've done plenty and who whine afterwards about their time with a million reasons why they didn't go as fast as they wanted to.
Sick.
Say it. Yeah, there you go. That was good. And then...
Dump the Trump.
Yeah, came back.
Yep. You say it.
Glad there is a comments column for us to all have a moan and let off steam.
So if you want us to read your comments out on air, write comments. Become anyway, a stuff commenter.
We just perversely...
Quit your job and close your curtains. Anyway, yep, moving on to greatest run ever.
Right. Maury Abraham,
uh-huh,
who's a great friend of the show.
Yeah.
It frequently engages with us on social media and is principal of a local school here in Auckland. Kia ora, guys. More of a series of races in one summer when I realised the podium was an impossible dream. The first was a 10K race on New Year's Day 1988, hosted by the Tauranga Athletic Club at their annual event. I was way off the podium but ran 33.04 and pipped the mighty Diane Roger by dry retching on her shoulder with 50 metres to go, which caused her to step aside enough for me to lurch past.
Psychological warfare.
Whoa, yeah. 2 weeks later, it was the Taupo 10 miler where I ran 54 minutes and some seconds to finish 6th when they had prizes to 5th. Oh no. Oh, it'll rip your nightie. And then a couple of weeks later, it was the Pukeko half marathon where I ran 1 hour 14 and some seconds to finish 4th and they had prizes to 3rd.
Ah!
Still, 1 hour 14.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. A couple of weeks later, it was the New Plymouth marathon where I ran 2 hours 38 and finished 11th and they had prizes to 10th. So I've given up chasing the podium and have spent the last 30 years running and racing, if you can call it that, just for the fun of running, the maintenance of fitness, the satisfying of the competitive streak within me, and most of all, the camaraderie provided by the crazy folks you end up doing it all with.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
So I've got one from Kieran Phillip, and Kieran Phillip he's a southern man, he lives in Cromwell, and he's got a fantastic beard, and he's a nice man.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Ticks all the boxes.
Ticks all the boxes. He's teaching our nation's children, so I've got to give him a shout out for that.
Two teaching people.
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah.
Respect to the pedagogues. Kia ora, Eugene and Matt. Congrats on the podcast. So great to hear about. So great to hear some homegrown material. Thought I'd chime in with my greatest run ever. For me, it was the Kepler Challenge in 2015. I started running on the 4th of January 2015 with the goal of getting fit enough to compete in a local Rogaine. During the month, I managed to complete a 5K fun run for the first time in my life. I got to the point where I was fit enough to enjoy it and managed to complete a 10km and a couple of half marathons during the year. Then November rolls around and I managed to win myself a free entry to the Kepler Challenge. Very exciting, though at this point I hadn't even run a marathon. Kepler Day rolls around, I find myself on the starting line with a bundle full of nerves. I told myself I'd go out easy and aim to finish. I headed out in the big bunch, found myself passing a few people here and there, and then all around having a grand old time. The kilometres seemed to pass by easily, helped by the scenery, the people, and the nice cold weather. I hit Irisburn Hut, which is approximately 34 kilometres into the race, and started the flat. I've been told this is where the race actually starts. It's just the long, boring run back to the car, actually, bro. Things went well, and I felt great. I got to Motoro Hut and got a big boost knowing that I was now running further than I had ever run before. I kept plodding along. Got to see the family at Rainbow Reach, which provided another boost, and then headed for home. Rainbow Reach is the 50k aid station. Crossing the dam to finish the race in 6:52, seeing my family there to support me, getting my medal and knowing I'd just run 60 kilometres, much further than anything I'd previously done, made this my greatest run ever. On top of that, I'd also triggered my love for ultra running, creating a passion for the sport that has kept me coming back for more in the years since. Thanks again for the awesome podcast, guys. Keep up the fantastic work. Cheers, Kieran. And Kieran, I mean, 6:52 for your first Kepler, you make me sick. Sick to my stomach.
Matt's now punching the computer.
Yeah.
Well done. That's awesome. Yeah, two greatest runs ever. And thank you to everyone who has sent in their greatest runs ever.
Keep them coming.
And we've got a great list of them to come.
Indeed. Right. Yeah. So moving on to the main event, our conversation with Lucy Bartholomew. I mean, Lucy is pretty famous, actually.
Pretty damn famous.
Being open about it. Like,
yeah.
The response to when we put up about this, who we were having on the show, has been quite phenomenal, actually. People are stoked. We're stoked. Lucy is fast. She runs for Salomon. She's 22. She's a plant-based athlete. She came third at Western States this year. She's won Ultra Trail Cape Town. She's won Ultra Trail Australia. Yeah, she's a beast. She won the Great Ocean Walkway event last week,
yes.
This Saturday,
yes.
11 hours. And yeah, this was an insanely good conversation. It left me, as you know, increasingly these days, with a real sense of gratitude. So enjoy. Dirtchurch Radio. Okay, kia ora. We're here with Lucy Bartholomew. Hi, Lucy. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
So you're calling us from, or you're speaking to us from Melbourne, but you've only just kind of touched down. Hey, you've had quite the whirlwind summer. What have you been up to?
Yeah, it's been probably one of my biggest years of traveling. I left to America in the middle of May, and I spent 90 days, the whole visa there, and then flew from America to Europe and spent a month racing around there. And then touched down for a few days before a quick trip to Adelaide, and then now I'm here. So it's been a while since I've slept in my own bed.
Wow! So clocking up a few emails. How have you found it? Do you enjoy traveling?
I really embrace traveling. I think that, you know, I love the places it takes me, what it enables me to see and do. I think that the hours that you spend at the airports and the lack of sleep that it gives you is challenging, but, you know, you've got to have that to really appreciate, you know, what traveling is.
Yeah, it's all part of the package, isn't it? It's sort of, you wish sometimes there's some way you could click your fingers and suddenly be on the other side of the world, especially coming from down under, but hey, that's just part of the experience, isn't it? Is hanging out in queues and airline transit lounges.
Yeah, and I think like one of the biggest things that I've learned is that you can really use that time, and instead of, you know, like, you know, you're up in the air, so you don't have to be connected on your mobile phone, and you can read a book, you can just chill out, and you can talk to people. I mean, you know, I've met some great people this year at the airports that, you know, they're not about the running, and they're, you know, they're just like totally blown away by like what I'm doing with my life. But then, you know, I'm blown away with where they're going and where they've been. And I think it's just, it allows you to connect with a different group of people. And I think you can use that time, and then it's not wasted time at all.
I really like how you've, you reflect that in your social media. I mean, you're a vociferous user of social media, and I guess, as you know, someone who, you know, you are using self-promotion in the most, I guess, positive sense, but you do reflect that. You're like, well, off to the airport, gonna sit down, gonna do that, gonna do this. I guess it gives it a more complete picture. Do you find that challenging, using social media as much as you do? Does it get overwhelming, or how do you manage that?
I think, you know, I love sharing, and I think that I'm so fortunate to see amazing places and meet amazing people. And I would post what I post, whether I had one follower, being my dad, or if I had 60,000 followers. You know, I think that I wouldn't change what I say, how I do it. And if I don't think there's anything worth posting, I won't post. I don't feel the need to. I just feel like I always hear something or see something or read something. And I'm always like, oh, I want to share this with people. And, you know, yesterday I was flicking through YouTube as I was just lying on my bed, and I watched this TEDx talk, and it was about women empowerment. And it was 3 years ago it was posted, so it was super old. But I just flicked it up on my Instagram, and the amount of women or girls that watched it and were like, that was amazing, it's exactly what I needed right now. And you just, it wasn't because this is something new, it's just sometimes you just got to share what you're doing and what you see.
I absolutely agree with you. And you know, you're talking to two men here who, I guess, grew up, and we were the last generation who grew up pre-internet, grew up pre, you know, CD, pre-everything. And I remember the first time I ever emailed one of the people in my favorite bands, you know, and they got back to me immediately from the other side of the world. And I remember that, how powerful and how immediate that was. And I think it's really, you know, it's really good that you use that that medium to share stuff like that, because you're right, it's challenging times at the moment, hey, for conscious people, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you can, there's two sides of social media, and for sure there is the keyboard warriors that will say something that they would never say in person, and there's people that will just put their opinions up and won't do it in a loving and well-communicated way. And I want to use social media for the better side, for inspiring and for motivation and for sharing other people's accomplishments and sharing my life. And, you know, I'm not trying to paint a picture of this false life that I do live. You know, I'm very open about, yeah, the hours that I spend sitting and waiting for airplanes, the lack of sleep that comes with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's always that bright side, and that's the places that it gets you and the people that you meet.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I guess, what you're talking about, and the way that you operate on social media is with respect and honesty and sort of a reality, and that's really refreshing.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I try and do.
Have you heard of, do you know who John Joseph is?
No, I don't.
So John Joseph, he was on the Rich Roll podcast a while ago. He's the lead singer of a band called the Cro-Mags, and a long-time plant-based athlete. You know, he's 56 years old. I think he's been vegan since he was maybe about 20, 21. And he talks about sort of that same sort of thing too. And he came up with a very violent upbringing. You know, he's a survivor of sexual assault. He was in a boys' home. He was heading to prison and went into the Navy. And he talks about that sort of sense of, what does he say? If you don't start nothing, there won't be nothing, in terms of that sort of anti-social media stuff, and really promoting that kind of positivity and that connection through social media. Is that linked, and this might seem a funny question, is that linked to the way that you choose to live a plant-based life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all kind of comes back to, you know, I want to keep everything natural and organic and raw. You know, I'm not painting up my pictures. I'm not setting shots up, and I'm not trying to fake my way through it. And that translates to the way that I eat, is that I try and keep everything from the ground raw and, you know, organic. And I'm not, you know, eating a lot of the packaged and the processed stuff. And it's kind of, yeah, I guess, you know, it kind of comes across in both areas.
When you've removed the violence from your plate, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and that kind of, you know, that that feeling of eating something, eating an animal, or that, you know, connection that you have, it's the same as on social media.
What turned your head to a plant-based way of being? I mean, I understand that it's not been a, you know, a lifetime for you. You did grow up eating meat. What turned your head?
I think, I was at school and it was kind of the thing to do at the time. And so for sure I did it for the first, because it was kind of the fad thing to do. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to try this for a week. And, you know, it was more like you recognize the health benefits, and I started to feel really good, and it made me eat some more vegetables and some more fruit. And that was really cool. But what's kept me in the lifestyle of plant-based is when you start to look into it and you read more about the ethical side of things and the environmental side of things. And then you start to connect that with, you know, when you're running through the mountains, and these are the places that are getting destroyed for consumption of food. And then you run past a paddock of animals, and those animals are there to feed us. And that's not the way that is sustainable. And when you make that connection, and, you know, running is my life at the moment, it seems like a small thing to give up in order for me to be able to enjoy this passion and share it with other people in the future.
So it didn't start out as a sort of philosophical decision, but
Oh, no, it started as like a bet with a friend, you know?
like all good things. But
yeah.
But that's where you're coming to now. There's more sort of that sort of thinking behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I was, when I grew up, my mum and dad, but mainly my mum, was under the assumption that no meal was complete without meat and that I would definitely start to wither away if I didn't eat meat sources of protein. And so she did all the cooking, and it was just kind of, you know, I ate what was put on the table. When she moved away to London and my parents split up 3 years ago, I became the person that cooked the meals because dad burns water. And we just kind of, I decided to try it, and, you know, we all started to thrive, and I realized that it was a sustainable lifestyle.
Great. And that's, so no doubt you will have been bombarded with the whole, you can't be an ultra athlete and be a plant-based, you know, have a plant-based diet, but you're proving them wrong.
Yeah, and that's kind of been, you know, my philosophy since I started running. When I ran 100Ks at 15, you know, it was kind of, tell me I can't and I'll show you I can. And it only adds fuel to the fire. So it made me really want to educate myself, read about it, do it properly. Because there's two ways to be, you know, vegan is you can do it the plant-based whole foods way of eating, you know, good sources of proteins and carbohydrates, or you can go Oreos are vegan, chips are vegan, you know, yes, and you can justify it all like that, but you're not going to thrive off that kind of a diet.
When I grew up, I came up in the straight edge vegan community, and man, there were some unhealthy people around, because it's exactly that. They're like, well, Oreos are vegan, yeah, you know, and this Kraft peanut butter that may be vegan.
Yeah, I mean, like, wow. Sugar, oil, yeah, and salt, it's all vegan. And people justify their food choices and go, oh, but it's vegan, it must be healthier. And it's like, no, they probably just add more crap to make it taste better. You know, it's sometimes it's not the vegan option that's always the healthiest.
No, yeah. Yeah. Has that translated? Do you think your plant diet has translated to you? You've had a string of quite incredible results this year. Do you think there's any correlation between that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, if you go back to, you know, when I was running, when I was eating meat, then I went vegetarian, and then I have gone plant-based and really taken a focus and a passion towards what goes into my body, my results have only escalated with the increase in, you know, care and passion for what I'm putting into myself. Yeah, I think that I feel like I'm recovering and racing and, you know, being at my optimal off this diet. So it's definitely working at the moment.
Fantastic. You mentioned the running the 100K as a 15-year-old, and that's a sort of a bit of a famous story, but I just wondered if you could take us through that and how that came about and how you approached it.
Yeah, so my dad always ran marathons, and then he started to get older, and he started to get slower, and instead of having to work harder to improve his times, he just decided to run further. So he signed up for what was then the North Face 100 in Sydney, and I didn't see him much between him training for this race and then him at work and me at school. And I started to see him going away for these long runs on the weekend, and sometimes he'd spend the night away somewhere and do some long runs back to back. And I really wanted to hang out with him, so I decided to join him. And I used to join him on my bike at first, and then as I got fitter, I started to run the long runs with him. And I really loved just the whole going away with my dad, catching up and spending time together and, you know, completing these long runs, but without that being the focus. And then, of course, we'd all go and eat a lot of food afterwards, and he paid for it all. So it was sweet.
We went.
And yeah, exactly. And then I went up to the Blue Mountains with him, and he thought that I'd joined enough of the journey that I could come to Sydney and watch him run. So I went up to the Blue Mountains, and, you know, he left from the start line. And then I was this, you know, 14 at that time year old girl, kind of being like, well, now what do I do? How do I get from checkpoint to checkpoint to see him? And, you know, I just did what I'd learned to do, and I just ran. So I ended up running the course holding all his shit that he'd given me to be at the checkpoints with and running it faster than him, and then getting to the checkpoints, setting it up, and he'd come in all high and mighty, like, he's like, oh, the hills out there are huge. I was like, yeah, I know, I've just done them. And, you know, and he still wanted me to take his shoes off and wipe his feet to dry them. And so he finished that 100K race, and I saw, you know, Brendan Davies in the front of the pack, and then I saw my dad finish and watched that. But then I saw, like, the back of the packers and how they, throughout the day, they were still smiling and they would just have their hands full of cake and lollies. And I saw this sport that was just unbelievable. And I watched them finish and I said, you know, I want to do this. So I found the only race in Australia, the Surf Coast Century, that would allow a 15-year-old girl to run. And the only stipulation was that I had to run side by side with my dad the whole time. And so that's what I did. And it was the best thing that could have happened for my running career because, you know, we started the race and I took off and dad doesn't do that pace. So he pulled me back in. And if I'd run the 100Ks by myself, I would have blown up and either pulled out or had a very slow finish and been really upset and really tired. Whereas this way I ran and talked and chatted with my dad and ran at an easier pace. And I finished thinking I could do that again and I want to do that again. So, but I think the biggest thing about it was that it wasn't about running 100Ks. It wasn't about that huge number. It was just about, you know, spending time with my dad.
Fantastic. And wow, that's an incredible experience to go through. And it sounds like, and from what you're saying, it enhanced your relationship with your dad, and you sound like you've got a really good, tight relationship.
Yeah, me and dad we're very, very tight. We still share, you know, we don't run together now, but we go to away for weekends or to races, and, you know, we start together and then we come together at the end. And it's almost more fun because we have these different stories to tell and different experiences and journeys along the way. So, yeah, we're very, very close. He came to America this year to come and crew me for my first 100 miles. And that was a really special experience.
A lot of people were really excited to follow you, you know, and the Team Lucy stuff and those really cool shirts with the watermelons and stuff like that. I want to talk about Western States. How was that?
Western States has always been something that I wanted to run. I watched the Unbreakable or Unbroken, whatever it's called, documentary when I was 15 with my dad. And I always thought, this is the race I want to do. And then I started to head more towards the really big mountain running. And then I was gifted an entry into this race that most people wait, you know, 6 to 8 years to get into. So it was really, really cool to kind of have a bib. And I just felt incredibly grateful because my dad's, he's on his 7th year this year of trying to get in. And I was just handed a bib and an opportunity. Yeah.
You pipped him.
I know.
And he's still talking to you.
Well, when I called him, when I got the email, I called him and I said, Dad, guess what? I got into Western States. And it's just silence on the other end. And I was like, Dad, are you there? And he goes, yeah, that's great. Awesome. And I was like, so are you going to come? And he was like, why would I come? And I was like, you know, you could be a part of it. And he was just like, just not interested. And then he came around with it and he got interviewed before the race. And they said, you know, how are you feeling about Lucy running Western States? And I think they expected like him to say, oh, I'm really nervous for her, but I'm excited for her. I'm really proud of her. And he goes, oh, I'm just jealous. And it was awesome. It was really cool to kind of have him by my side, and it really made the experience very special.
Brilliant. As well as finishing third must have been pretty special as well.
Yeah. Podium. It was so much more about the journey to Western States. Western States, the 3 months of training, the 12 weeks that I put in, and the community that kind of got around me, and the whole Team Lucy thing, which just exaggerated my eating of watermelon by tenfold, was just awesome. And you're standing on the start line, I felt like I'd already won. The third place and the day that I had was just kind of icing on the cake and a really cool experience of racing a way that I generally don't do, and kind of gave me a confidence to take forward.
Do you get any, and by no means me mentioning this, am I giving it any credence? Do you get any like curmudgeonly old ultra bros, or I don't know what the female pronoun for bro is, giving you a bit of pushback because of your age?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's just because it's unfamiliar and it's different, and it's that same thing. I just see that as a really cool challenge to kind of like, you know, I remember being on the Ultra Trail Cape Town Elites panel, and I had Andrea Husa next to me, and she's 52, and I'm this 20, I was 20 at the time, 20-year-old. And I think it's, you know, it's so cool that we can both be from different stages of life coming together and like racing each other, but just over this one passion. And most of the time it's all in good faith and all in just kind of, yeah, it's just different and unfamiliar. And it's just kind of opening doors to what could be possible.
You know, when I was editing the magazine, I put you on the cover. It was one of the most single satisfying things that I've ever done, because we used to get quite a bit of pushback. We got a bit of negativity if we had a young woman on the cover, because it was seen as, oh, that's not trail running, bro, or that's not ultra running, bro. And to put you on the cover, you know, and you're out at Sulphur Point, Kurt Matthews took that really wonderful photo, and then to say in the editorial, well, unless your name is Varjin Armstrong or Chris Dunnell, sit down, because Lucy was a minute behind those dudes. And Kat, I would hate to have seen, if the race was longer, what would have happened. Or love to have seen it, rather. Do you think it's changing for the better? Do you think that that sort of that pushback, that kind of, well, I guess that sort of inherent sexism is getting less and less?
And ageism.
And ageism too, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, and it's known that the longer the race goes, the more that the girls and the women seem to be stronger and be able to kind of excel at the distances. You look at someone like Courtney Dewater, who like won the Moab 200 miles outright. And not only did she win it, she just won it and smiling and stoked and just a real kind of strong woman figure that's doing something amazing. And she was leading Tahoe until 20 miles to go in 200 miles. I think that it's kind of it's like breaking 3 hours in the marathon. Where back in the day, that used to be kind of like incomprehensible. But once someone did it, suddenly all these other people were able to do it. And I think that when you see someone like Courtney winning something and running these times, which were like unfathomable, you've got this kind of like, I could do that, you know, I should be able to do that. And you start to run a little differently, and you're that mindset changes, and suddenly your body can do more than what it thought it could. And yeah, I feel like this is just the beginning of a pretty special time for young people and for women in the sport.
So that's kind of, it's infectious too, isn't it? It sort of spreads. And I mean, as you're already saying, you looking at Courtney feeling inspired, and then others will be looking at you feeling inspired. Does that sort of help you when you're racing at all? Or are you just so into race mode that you're not thinking about where your inspiration comes from? I mean, just talk us through Western States, for instance, and what got you there?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is with 100 miles, you have a lot of time to think. So I definitely had plenty of time to kind of go, okay, why am I doing this? And I think, you know, when you find your why in this sport, that's when you go from being a good runner to a great runner. If you can think about, you know, all the reasons why you, like, I remember going through the 100K, oh, the 70K mark of Western States, and I was leading, and I thought, I shouldn't be doing this. You know, I'm not. There's so many women in this race that are just so, so strong, and I shouldn't be here. And the minute you change that mindset to, no, hang on, like, I trained my ass off for this, and I gave my all, and, you know, I've sacrificed so much, and I have so many people believing in me and here for me and doing everything they can for me to have my best day, then suddenly you can do it, and you'll do it. You know, I only did it for another 30 Ks before I got overtaken, but I got an extra 30 out of myself that I didn't think was possible. So I think that, you know, yeah, your why in this sport is so important. And, you know, to have my dad there at the checkpoints wearing the Team Lucy top and having kids running alongside me and yelling at me and being, you know, wanting to be a part of this journey and opening their eyes to seeing someone, you know, giving their all out there. I think that that's what allowed me to dig deep and, you know, to make it that extra 40 miles.
That's brilliant. That's, yeah. I mean, I think that's sums it up really, doesn't it? You've got to figure out your why and then really kind of, that carries you along and that gets you there and believing in yourself as well and knowing that you've done the work and you're worthy. You can do it.
Yeah, and it's just that small little mindset of, you know, when people look down at their watch and they're like, whoa, I can't run this pace. But you are running this pace. You're doing it, you know, and the minute you say you can't, then your body kind of goes, pulls back. But if you say, no, cool, okay, I'm going to see, like, how much longer can I do this? Because I'm doing this now and it feels good. And I think that when you do that, you open so many more doors to finding your true potential.
How did that translate to running the Trans Rockies with another person? Because you ran it with Hillary Allen, hey?
I did. It was my first team race, which was a really big eye-opening experience because, you know, it's one thing to go through highs and lows by yourself. And, you know, when you feel good, you can go. And when you feel bad, you slow down. But when you've got two people that you have different moments of highs and lows, it's really hard to manage because when I was feeling good and I was ready to crank it up and like go, Hillary wasn't feeling so good. And so we had this, you know, we had to manage that and be respectful of each other. So, you know, we had to just work it out and kind of, it was a really cool, week of just kind of day one. I think we both kind of were trying to be running at a pace that we both couldn't sustain. And then day two, like I was stronger. Day three, she was stronger. And day four, we were like, okay, we need to sort something out because otherwise we're not going to make the 6 days. And it was cool. It was a really nice experience. And I think there's a lot to be taken away when you've got to respect someone else because it's so easy to be selfish out there when you're running 100 miles by yourself. And everyone's there for you to have your best day, but you've got to be there for Hillary, like I was. And yeah, it was a really eye-opening experience to sharing the highs and lows of double the people. So yeah.
And I guess, you know, talking about overcoming adversity, Hillary's had her fair share in the last year or two, hey?
Yeah, you know, she's a massive inspiration. She's what she's been through and how she's dealt with it all is incredible. And I've stayed with her 2 weeks before starting Trans Rockies. And it was really cool to kind of see her, you know, putting back her life and, you know, getting back into the gym and doing some long runs. And we talked a lot about kind of where this has taken her, not just physically, but mentally. And how much, you know, she still struggles to believe in herself. So it was really nice to spend 3 weeks with her and be like, I'm here to be your biggest fan. You know, I will wake you up in the morning and we will go for that run. And then I will go with you to the gym and, you know, make sure that you can tick those boxes and I'll cook you some, you know, plant-based food and we'll, you know, we'll have some fun together. And, you know, I wish I could do that for more people because, you know, the lift in her spirits and in her belief in herself just in those 3 weeks was really special.
That's awesome. How did that come together? I mean, you both, you know, you run for Salomon, Hillary's North Face. How did that partnership come together? Was it a facilitated thing or did you just meet at a race? Or
no, it was actually totally not organized. So I was meant to run Trans Rockies with Mayel, actually. And because he was meant to come across and pace me for Western States, he then got a job, which is very boring, very irritating on my plans. And so he couldn't come. So I had to quickly find some different paces. So I got Sally McRae and Dakota Jones.
Oh, they're two good substitutes.
Yeah, not too bad.
Not too bad.
And then I was at Broken Arrow the week before Western and Hillary was racing there. And I said, oh, like, I've got to change my entry for Trans Rockies to solo or, you know, or find someone to run with. And she said, oh, I'm looking for something to do to celebrate 1 year on from my fall. And I said, well, you know, just 6 days running 120 miles interests you. And, you know, we've only met each other three or four times for an hour or so before races or during races. And yeah, and then suddenly I was going to her house for 3 weeks and then we were running a week together. So it was kind of not planned, but kind of the best thing. That's what always happens when it's not planned.
Wow, that's fantastic. That sounds like such a, gosh, a journey seems like such a cliche, but I mean, yeah, it's sort of thrown together, hey.
And yeah, it's best, like it was kind of meant to be.
Yeah. So what are you up to now? You're home. What's the schedule like? I see on your, you know, on your Instagram stories, you've been doing some Salomon like group runs. You were in Adelaide recently.
Yeah. So Salomon has a van that we have a lot of demos, and so what we've been doing is touring around Australia to different states and spending a week there, working with the retailers and then meeting the community and doing community runs and then talks, and we managed to do a race in Adelaide just to get a longer run in. So I was up in Adelaide doing that, which is always really special. I always love coming home, and I always feel like I neglect the Australian community a little when I'm overseas, and it's awesome to kind of reconnect with them, especially Adelaide, which I hadn't been to in 2 years, and they're some of my favorite people. So we were there just kind of letting people try shoes and watches, and I was talking about my experiences overseas. Now I'm just kind of hanging out at home. I'm doing the Great Ocean Walk 100 kilometer this Saturday, which is a race that I ran when I was 17. And I ran it, I was in the midst of exams, and it was kind of my outlet. I just said I needed to do a race to get through the last of the exams. And I ran really bad because I was studying, I wasn't training, and you can't just run 100Ks off the bat. So I'm really excited to return to that, and with my dad's running as well. So we're going to head down to do that, and then on the Sunday watch my brother run the Melbourne Marathon, which is kind of cool because, yeah, he's getting into running and it's awesome. But other than that, I'm heading to Hong Kong to be a coach at a Salomon Running Academy for junior runners. So kind of trying to find like some potential people for it to be on the Salomon team and teach in Hong Kong and race at the Lantau 70. And then from there, I'm flying to Nepal for 3 weeks to do some work with girls running in Nepal and providing some opportunities over there. And then I'm back for a little bit and then to New Caledonia to finish the year, hopefully with Mayel, to go and explore some of the trails over there.
Brilliant.
Wow, that's a lot in 6 weeks.
Yeah. And are you adjusting to life as someone who just runs to having to fit these other things in around it? How do you cope with that?
I really love it. You know, I've got like little projects that I'm working on as I kind of move around, one of them being a cookbook. And it's really cool because as I travel, it opens my eyes to new dishes and new ideas that I want to then take back and work on. You know, having these other things just allows me to connect with a whole lot more people. And that's why I always say yes, is just because, you know, maybe the travel isn't fun and maybe it takes away from my training. But, you know, for this back half of the year, like after Western States, I pretty much put a full stop to my racing or my big A races. I'm still running, still doing some races, but purely just for kind of joy. Yeah, this is kind of a really good time for me to just travel around and meet people and have more of experiences without the pressure of racing.
So why wouldn't you take those opportunities? That's yeah, absolutely. I understand completely. And so in Nepal, you mentioned working specifically with young women, with young girls running.
Yeah. So the idea is to team up with Mira Ray, who's another Salomon athlete. And we're just going to do a bit of like a girls running camp and just tour around and stay in tea houses and just kind of have some fun. Like, you know, I'm going to take across some old shoes and some gear and just give these to these people, give it to the community for them to play around with and to keep. And really, I've always wanted to go to Nepal, and I think it'd be really cool to connect with connect with the trail running community there. And then I'm just going to do my own little back 10 days and just tour around by myself
in the mountains.
Yeah.
Wow, how amazing. You seem to have a real affinity for the mountains, but you grew up in Melbourne, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think
How do you think that came about?
Well, it's always kind of, when I was into running, we'd run in the Dandenongs, and that was kind of big hills and big mountains, and they kind of get up to 400 meters high. And, you know, I ran and raced there, and then I went to New Zealand, and it opened my eyes to the bigger mountains in Queenstown and Wanaka, and I was like, whoa, okay, wow, this is big. And then, you know, I joined the sport when it wasn't super competitive in the females especially. And so I had all these good results, and I was able to go and race in France, in Chamonix. And then the mountains got really big. And I think that, you know, the strongest thing that I have, I don't come from the mountains, but my appreciation, because I'm not from the mountains, when I see them and I'm there, I'm so in awe that I just want to go and run in them and, you know, take every moment that I can. Because then when I come back home, not only do I appreciate being able to actually run on the flat and run sub 5 minutes, because it just seems that you don't do that overseas, you kind of have this nice balance of, you know, you enjoy your mountain time, and then you have your flat road time, which is, you know, where I live now and where I have lived. I've always lived on the flat, and training for something like TDS, like I was last year, I always felt at a disadvantage. Not because I thought that all the girls that were living in mountains were mountain goats, and that, you know, I couldn't keep up with that because I don't live there. But then training for Western States, it was perfect. You know, you can just run out on the flat roads, and you can call that training. Mm. So I think it's just kind of, it's not easy. I ran a lot of, you know, like you run a lot of repetitions. And I remember when Emily Forsberg was coaching me, and she said, oh, just go get 3,000 meters of elevation over a run. And I was like, you know, you'd have to run forever to get 3,000 meters.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I went to the Dandenongs, and I went to the steepest track, or one of the steepest tracks, and I ran up and down for 6 hours, and I covered 45 kilometers, 3,000 meters. And, you know, I took the train out there, and then I think my dad felt quite bad for me, so he came out and joined me for the last two and then gave me a lift home. And I just, when you do something like that, that's so mentally, more so than physically draining, but also like challenging, when you can go to Chamonix and run, you know, 3,000 meters in the blink of an eye, and it's super easy, you just have this real kind of appreciation for nature.
No wonder. Yeah. And yeah, that mental toughness is phenomenal to be able to build that. It's because it is tough.
You're speaking to sea level dwellers.
That's here. Right. Who are at the moment trying to train for Kepler, a 60-kilometer run over a mountain in the flats of Auckland. So, yeah. Any tips you've got for training for hill running when you basically live in a flat zone?
You can, like, repetitions build you physically, but they build you more so mentally. And, you know, if you ask anyone when you're running kind of ultra distances or long distance running, you know, they say it's 90% mind and 10% body. I think otherwise you can do things in the gym. I do a bit of like strength training and weights training, and just that, you know, that squat motion and those step ups, they really build those muscles that activate when you run uphill. So just incorporating that kind of stuff into your routine will help you.
That sounds great.
I've just rediscovered deadlifts, and I'm just actually trying.
Yeah, you found your hamstrings?
I know where they are now. I'm just trying. I've been out and done my hill reps before we spoke, so I'm desperately trying to hang on to the pack mentally.
I was about to say, Matt, after this interview is completed, Matt will have sat still for too long. He's not be able to stand up after doing his reps this morning.
Goodness,
so
man. Yeah. But I mean, I guess it's that thing, isn't it? It's that new, and not to, but it's a common theme that every elite level athlete we've spoken to has talked about: the craft and the discipline of running. And it doesn't matter who we've spoken to, you know, vastly divergent experiences, ages, cultural perspectives. Everyone talks about you get fast or you get strong by doing hard work, and hard work is hard, but it's so beneficial, because I guess what it does then is it builds that sort of your new normal in your life, hey?
Yeah, I think like the most important thing you can do is build consistency. And before things get too hard and the sessions get, you know, really tough, you just need to get used to running and make that routine. You know, they say you have to do it for 21 days to for your body, for your mind and your body to accept that this is something that you're going to continue to do. And I think, you know, Mayal, when he was coaching me towards Western States, it was all about just getting that consistency and just getting that, you know, getting used to getting up, getting going. And I think that's one of the most valuable things that you can do is just kind of create that routine, and then from there start to increase the intensity of those runs.
You're so seasoned, I guess, because you've been doing it for such a long time, and it absolutely doesn't matter that you're 22 years old. If you've been doing it since you were 15, that's 7 years of very hard won experience. Where do you see, I mean, on the one hand, you could say you've got such a long time in front of you, I guess we all do, but where do you see this progressing, your career, your life? Is it indistinguishable from each other, or is it compartmentalized? Where do you see yourself going in the future?
I want to be in this sport, how I am in this sport, whether that means competing or just kind of running for myself, is I just want to do that for as long as I can. One of the biggest passions of mine is I love running camps. So I've run 6 or 7 camps in Melbourne where I've, you know, it's been a weekend away, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it means that you get to live with people, and I got to cook for them all, and you get to go running, and then you get to talk to them all and break down barriers and insecurities, and kind of, you know, it's almost like a life coaching camp. And that's kind of my biggest passion. I think I love the racing's cool. You know, it's nice to, you know, get your kudos, get your medal, your belt buckle, but it's not why I run. You know, I'd run every day in my life, even if it meant that I never raced. And I really value the community side of things and the impact that you can make on other people. And you can do that best when you get 3 days with a smaller group. I started the camps with 5 at first, and then I had the biggest one was 30. And, you know, cooking for 30 people and running with 30 people and, you know, spending all this time. Mayal's been at a few of them. It's so empowering to see people just change in those 3 days, and telling them that they can, you know, they can run 100 Ks, they can run 5 kilometers, you know, whatever their Everest is. So that's kind of what I want to do in the future, is take those camps and take them worldwide. I want to make them accessible for more people. And, you know, I want to get young kids running and, you know, get them off their social media and off their phones and show that this is a thing and it's a beautiful thing that gets you out into this world.
It's amazing how many people talk themselves out of running, hey?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that what, you know, because 100 kilometers these days in this community seems normal, and 100 miles is like, you know, that's a long run, and then now 200's becoming the new 100, and everyone's then now doing back every event of an event. You know, they need to run the Friday and the Saturday and the Sunday event.
Yeah.
And it can be quite overwhelming. And then when someone tries to come into this sport and all they want to do is run, you know, a trail and not fall over and just finish, it can be, you can feel like you're not good enough and you don't deserve to be in this sport. And what I want to do is break down that barrier. I mean, when I ran Ultra Trail Australia, you know, I ran the 100 kilometers last year, and then this year I ran the 22 kilometers. And people said to me, you know, the days before, they said, oh, are you injured? And I said, no, I wouldn't be on a start if I was injured. And then they said, oh, you know, you're just running the kids race. And I was like, I'll show you this is no kids race. And it really bothered me, because as my brother's gotten into the sport, you know, he's felt that. He's like, oh, you're running the 100, you know, I'm just doing the 50. And it's like, you're not just doing anything.
It's preposterous.
Yeah, it's just crazy, this mentality, and it's unhealthy. So I really am a big advocate for kind of, you know, when we do these camps away and these weekends, that, you know, it provides for everybody, whether you're aiming to run 100 miles or whether you just want to take that first step out the door. I want to be there for all those people.
Wow. I think you've, yeah, that's just, that's one of our pet peeves is this whole, I'm only doing the 100 mile, I'm only doing the 100K, or I'm only doing the 60K, or I'm only doing the 20K. So it's fantastic to hear somebody of your caliber and of your experience and talent saying that. I think that's a really important message for people to hear. And I also think it's a really nice segue for us into the question that we ask everyone, which is, you know, unless you're about to say that it's the time I smashed myself and got to the top of the podium, but what is your greatest run ever?
It's so funny that you would ask this, because I got asked this in Adelaide and at a Q&A, and I said, you know, running the Ultra Trail Australia on my 21st, 100K on my 21st birthday was a very special run for me. I had my brother crewing me. I had my dad out running as well. And the course got changed, which upset me at first, but it turned out that on the out and backs, I got to see my dad, and he sung me happy birthday, and a whole lot of people along the trail wished me happy birthday. And I had this dream day that will be very, very special to me. And dad said to me last night, he said, I'm always interested to hear what you say, because, you know, there's always one run that I think is, you know, really, really special. And I asked him which one. He said it was. And he said it was my first race that I was, you know, I had my flight paid for to go to it. And it was in Adelaide. It was the Yarrabilla 56K. And I started the race and I started to feel really, really sick. So I actually called my dad. You know, I was 17 or something at the time. And I called him and I said, Dad, I'm so embarrassed. Like, these people have phoned, they've paid for me to come over and I'm letting them down. I'm going so slow. And he said, you know what, Lucy, they paid for you to go over to be an ambassador, to be a person for people to talk to and to aspire to. And he said, you should just run back towards people, find some people and move forward with them. And that's what I did. I ended up changing I stopped racing, and I ran back, found some people and ran forward and brought them up the hill, and then stopped at the aid station, waited a bit and connected with another group of people. And it really opened my eyes to, you know, why I'm in this sport, what being a face of this sport means, and what, you know, racing can do. It can be a time that you push yourself, you don't speak, you taste blood in your mouth and you win, or you can connect with people. And it was the first experience where I thought, this is more valuable to me than any trophy that I'll get given. And when he said that last night, I thought, you know what, that's probably one of the most special and one of my greatest runs, was when I was able to drop the ego, drop the care, and change some people's lives through running with them.
Fantastic.
Phenomenal.
That's amazing. That's, yeah, how wonderful and insightful, and how lucky that you do have that relationship with your dad, that he can remind you of that as well and you can see what he means.
Yeah, and there's many times that I'll remember, because he said, he goes, I remember getting the call and I was walking up a hill on his run, and he said, you know, I felt closer to you on that, and now whenever you race, I go for a run because I feel like I'm just a little bit closer to how you're feeling. And, you know, it's a really special thing, because I know that he's always, he'll always have my back, and he knows that at the end of the day, it's not the result that defines me, but it's how I handle everything else.
Brilliant. We're just speechless.
My daughters are outside at Eugene. So a couple of times this podcast, you know, as a father of, I got three kids, I got two daughters running around outside at the moment at Eugene's, and what a wonderful relationship you appear to have with your dad. That's,
yeah, and you know, and to have that insight yourself, it's just fantastic. We really appreciate this conversation. We have loved talking to you. Thank you. It's just so, we're so grateful that you do have been so open and
absolutely
have shared so much with us.
Yeah,
no worries. Thank you so much for having me on.
She's amazing.
She really is amazing.
Yeah.
And an amazing relationship with her family, especially her dad.
I really liked that.
Yeah.
I really...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really... I thought she was very open and she spoke so beautifully about that relationship, yeah. I thought.
And as someone who has daughters, I mean, it's, yeah, that was a, it brought another dynamic to it as well. So thank you, Lucy.
Yeah, and, we really appreciate it, Lucy.
Hope you all enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm sure that you guys all appreciated it as well.
Yes.
Guys and girls.
Guys and girls.
Yeah. Hey, we've got some exciting things coming up.
Yep.
A couple of live shows that we're talking about doing.
Yep.
We'll give you dates on that soon.
Yep.
We'll know much, much more, hopefully by next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, we need to get our stuff together.
Taking the Dirt Church to the live environment.
Mm. So thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another interesting conversation with an interesting runner.
Yep.
We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio.
Email at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com or www.dirtchurch.com is our website.
Dirt Church Radio.
Dirt Church Radio, dirtchurch.com is a grunge band, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
It's not that Southern Baptist.
No, it's actually a grunge band.
It is.
So okay. If you like grunge, go to dirtchurch.com. And if you like this, whatever this is, go to www.dirtchurchradio.com. Professional to the end.
Yeah, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher.
Stitches? Yep. Stitcher.
You can get Stitches.
Snitches and get
other,
Stitches.
And other podcast platforms. We are on fire today. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. Send us in your greatest run ever.
Yep.
I've already said that. Thanks to Lucy Bartholomew. Thanks to Ultra for sponsoring the show.
And it would be great if you share this and, you know, if you like it, rate us, share us, subscribe. The more people that hear this would be, wow, we really are on fire today. So and the more people that hear this.
Thanks to our editor and OG, Kieran, whatever that means.
Be the best.
And we've got another great guest lined up next week. We do.
We do.
Yeah.
We actually literally do. We're talking to them
sometimes
tomorrow.
We just make that bit up, but we actually
do. No, we literally properly
sometimes
do.
Sometimes we're just so seat of the pants.
Yeah.
Can we just end this hell?
I'll give him a clue, eh? Ha! There we go.
What? I don't even know that clue. Catch you next week.
It's cryptic. Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.
Yep.
The OG.
The OG.